Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is your Alt Facts for the week. As always, I'm Chris Payne, here with Kevin Rutherford from the Billboard Charts Department.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm sad. Feeling maybe a little bit better than Jesse Lacey most days, but
yeah,
I don't know if that's saying much.
Yeah, I know, right? That's
I've been listening to a lot of Brand New lately.
Yeah, and
we're kidding. We like you, Jesse. We like you.
And the album's, album's great.
And we appreciate the version of yourself that you've put out on this album, which we'll get into, but is very openly jarring about,
very,
you know, about real shit. And we're so fucking happy to have those guys back.
Absolutely. It's been a long time, and I didn't know how much I needed it until it came out and listened to that. It was just like, geez, that's right. These guys rule. I kind of forgot, you know, and here they are.
Not only is it a number one album, but it's a fucking great album.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always exciting when, not just when a rock album goes number one, but like a good rock album.
Sure.
You know, not just like some rock band that's...
Are you going to name a bad rock band?
Well, no, I'm not going to. What I could. I'm not going to today. But like what I'm saying, I guess, is that like, you know, like a rock band that goes number one, but basically is still coasting on, you know, the success of like 10 years ago or something.
Sure.
And it's like...
We don't need to name names.
No, we don't need to name names. Yeah. Not at all. And I'm not even saying it's happened this year. It's just that, you know, it's nice when like a rock band hits number one on Billboard 200, and with an album that you feel like people might really still be talking about at the end of this year when we start making like year-end lists, versus something that's like, you know, the same old, yeah, I had a couple songs go to radio and they did okay, but by the end of the year, people are like, okay, well, what's next, you know? So that's kind of cool.
And there is even a brand new song going to radio. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's called Can't Get It Out, right?
Yeah.
Can't Get It Out. I thought so. I was like, I can't read my writing. I had like a sitting here and I'm like, wait, oh shoot. Yeah, Can't Get It Out got played at radio about around like 40 times last week, which in order to make the alternative rock radio chart, you have to do about triple that in order to actually make the chart. But for the first week, it's pretty good. And a lot of it was coming from a station up in Rochester, but there's a couple other stations playing around with it. A station in Philly played it 3 times, you know. A lot of it was like, you know, we're playing it once just to see what happens, but there are some stations that are really latching onto it. And this wouldn't be the first time that they made the alternative rock radio chart, if they do, but it'd be the first time in like 10 years. So that'd be pretty cool to see. But at the same time, you know, you think about alternative radio right now. What does it sound like? And does Brand New sound like that? Not exactly. So that might be its downfall in that regard. But to see it on radio at all, it's good.
Yeah, it's an outlier. But, you know, sometimes you have outliers catch on. And Brand New's, you know, super popular, as we're going to get into in this podcast. And, yeah, we'll keep in touch with this one, because this is very intriguing to me, the thought of a brand new song on the radio, maybe hit song on rock radio.
That'd be cool.
Even with all the commercial success in terms of album sales, downloads, with this new one debuting at number one, success at radio was not even something that was on my radio radar. I was not expecting that at all.
Absolutely not. And I wasn't either. And that's why I was kind of surprised when I was, you know, creating charts this morning, and I'm looking at, you know, kind of scrolling down below the chart threshold alternative, and like, hey,
there's
the Brand New song. All right, there we go. You know, it's always really exciting when you see songs from an album you really like that you're like kind of not sure if radio is going to take to it, seeing that pop up. And this could just be a 1 week thing around the new album. People are like, you know, like a station's like, oh, hey, so Brand New's got a new album out. Here's a song from it. And then it just goes nowhere. Possible. But I don't know. But either way, it's good to hear them back on the radio again. I'm sure some songs from Daisy probably were played. They didn't make the charts, but they were played. So this will be the first time since, like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Which I think hit, like, number 30. This is 10 years ago. So it's been a while, for sure. And that's their best charting song. So if they do make the chart with this song, number 30 is the next barrier, I guess.
And for those listening, to explain this process to them, to kind of pull back the curtain, in order for an artist to get played on commercial radio, it means that someone from their team, you know, usually their label, made a conscious effort to work it to radio, to send the single to promoters and say to them, here's our new song, please play that. So it is pretty interesting that Brand New, with this completely independent self-run label of theirs, Procrastinate Music Traders, they made the effort to push this to radio.
Yeah, absolutely. Because there's certain bands out there that, you know, they can put out a new song and, you know, radio's going to play it no matter what. Like, let's say, for instance, this new 30 Seconds to Mars song that just came out. You know, as long as this thing had a hook, you weren't going to have to take... There wasn't going to be a lot of convincing on the part of some of the biggest alternative stations in the country to at least play it a couple times, you know, probably, especially because they're probably still playing The Kill occasionally a couple times a week. So, you know, it makes sense. But someone like Brand New, not only have they not made this chart in 10 years, chances are people aren't playing, you know, Jesus Christ or something like that occasionally.
Some station in Long Island that plays Sick Transit once an hour.
Maybe. Yeah, see, that's probably not happening. And yeah, for a band like that that hasn't made a chart like that in so long and hasn't really had a radio presence in so long, it can be tough to really get people to listen to you, let alone if you're doing it independently like they are. So I'm sure there's a lot of hustling going on behind the scenes, and there'll have to be even more, I think, in order for it to really connect. You know, like for instance, a station like I think K-Rock out in L.A. played it once last week. And that's cool, and that's awesome. But, like, in order for it to get played, let's say, 10 times at K-Rock, I'm sure there's a lot that has to go into that. And there's probably a lot of convincing, a lot of, you know, people who still care about Brand New. And I think they can point to the album sales probably as one of those things. Like, okay, people are interested in this. That doesn't make the song a radio-friendly song, but people are interested at the very least. And, you know, it doesn't hurt to try it out. So I think that's where a lot of people are at right now. It's like, okay, yeah, sure, let's try it out, see how it does, and very curious to see what it looks like next week. If this goes up at all, if like a station like the Alt Nation station on a Sirius XM plays it more. They played it a couple times. I've noticed more recently that this isn't always true, but Sirius XM can be a tastemaker, especially in the alternative. So if they really catch on to it, start playing it more, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, and this is a song where Jesse Lacey, the frontman, really just opens and bares his soul. Like, he sings about being manic depressive, and that's actually, like, you can't really call it the chorus because it's not exactly repeated, but like, the climax, the loud part of the song.
Sure, yeah.
And I think it's going to be just as the song ages and goes on, I think it's going to be something that fans can really latch on to is a very just emotionally open moment.
Very
in Brand New's discography.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's not something that you necessarily hear on the radio a lot, you know, especially I think in the summertime. You know, people want some feel good
tracks. Brand New's ready for fall.
Yeah,
What's it like in the charts department? You know, you guys have been, you've had Despacito leading the Hot 100 for weeks on end. You've had some kind of lagging sales weeks of the Billboard 200 albums chart where nothing new comes out and sells enough to bump up, you know, Kendrick Lamar's Damn just from the streams that it's collecting, and that just becomes the de facto number one. So does it surprise the hell out of you guys when you're like, who's this band Brand New? Like, what is this?
It certainly certainly will surprise certain members. And I'm not going to name names here, but I will say, you know, as someone who works in, who listens to a lot of rock music on a weekly basis because I part of my job, you know, while I was kind of surprised that it did as well as it did, the more I thought about it, I was like, well, you know, okay, this makes sense. But then that means I have to explain it to people and be like, okay, well, here's why. You know, yeah, this is kind of shocking to people sometimes. Like when you see, like, I mean, it's always surprising when a rock band goes number one anyway. Like I've said, I think this year the rock bands have gone to number one are Linkin Park and Arcade Fire. Mm-hmm. These are, I would say, legacy acts. Certainly Linkin Park and Arcade Fire, even at this point, is pretty, they're pretty tried and true. You know, it'd be weirder if they didn't go number one type of things. And when someone like Brand New pops along and does that well, I don't think a lot of people in the department are always expecting that, in the sense that if you are looking at like the upcoming releases and you're like trying to pick out, okay, what do you think is going to be the number one album, you know, this given week, can this be a number one album? Or is, again, like you said, like something like a Kendrick Lamar album just going to keep the number one spot because it has enough streams and sales? And I don't think a lot of people would have pointed at this week. And
it was a surprise album.
Yeah, but that's a big part of it. And I think if, you know, this has been announced like a month before, let's say, and you were like looking at it and being like, Brand New, probably not. But even on a Friday, like, or Thursday, or whenever the album actually dropped, it's still like kind of like, I don't know. But then if you look at the, you know, iTunes and seeing how well it's selling pretty much constantly right when it comes out, then it's like, okay, well, maybe there's something here. But I think it was surprising to some people, and I think it was also surprising in the sense that it's, again, an independent album, and there aren't physical copies. You know, this is all digital for now.
Yeah.
But again, I think if you think about it, it's like, okay, this first album since 2009 is the band that a lot of people like. Their star might have even really grown.
The legend grew, yeah, for sure.
And it wasn't out on streaming at first, so you couldn't listen. I couldn't like wake up on Friday morning and listen to Science Fiction. I think it was like Sunday maybe when it finally
out of nowhere for the first few days, fans really had no way of knowing if they were ever gonna be able to listen to it for free.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, some friend sent them a leak, or that was probably gonna be,
yeah,
like the streams were getting taken down really quickly.
Sure.
One that was out there early was just one continuous track, not divided into 12 tracks. So the leaks are super unreliable. Basically, the only way you can really hear it for real for the first few days was to buy the digital download.
Exactly. And that really helps. That always really helps, I think, whenever something is only for sale and isn't streaming. You have to seek it out that way. And that certainly helped as well. So all these factors combined, it's like, okay, when I saw that preliminary number, it was like, okay, that's really good for them. But you think about it, and it's like, okay, well, this makes sense. This isn't super surprising. But until you kind of consider all those variables, you look at Brand New at number one on like the building, you know, preliminary charge, and you're like, oh, really? Brand New? And I think the same was, I think, said about Neck Deep, who put out an album same day.
On the podcast last week.
Yeah, yeah. And then this one debuts at number four on the Billboard 200. I think that's another band that a lot of people were kind of surprised with the sales of. I mean, it did very well. And with Neck Deep, I think it's more of a matter of, you know, they just got this pretty sizable building fan base. They're still on their way up. Like, I don't think they've hit their peak in terms, commercial peak,
and they're
yet.
From the UK as well, yes. Too, so I'm sure proportionally whatever they sold here, it was even better in England.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the England numbers yet, but I'm sure
the
right.
UK, they're from Wales, so we
should,
the
UK numbers, I will be always forget that's right.
Changing colors, and the alley is talking to us.
it's exciting to see albums like this go number one. It's as an all independent album. It's the first number one we've had this year that's like an independent album. We had, I think, 5 last year, and one of them is like someone like Metallica. So big acts in a lot of cases. And so it's always cool when an independent album goes number one that's like this. It's like really just truly like this is the band is distributing this and kind of directly to the consumer in a way. Like it's cool. I like it.
Yeah, explain to that for listeners who might not be super familiar, what does independently distributing an album mean? What are some of the challenges that a band like Brand New faces in putting out an album just on their own like that?
Yeah, so it's most acts are signed to a major label. I shouldn't say most acts. A lot of acts are signed to a major label. And when you're signed to like a major label, like a label, like a Warner or something like that, you get the... you receive the spoils of that this huge multi-million or billion-dollar record company corporation handling it all for you. And as you get into smaller labels, there's less manpower to do all this. So because of that, you know, an independent album doesn't really, and this is independent, this isn't just like, you know, someone like Brand New who put it out on their own label. This could even be like a very small indie label that's making, you know, mostly releasing in, let's say, indie rock music. But so you've heard of the label, but it is still an independent label, and it's tough for small. The smaller you get, the tougher it is to, you know, really get your music out there in terms of promotion, and all kinds of things. So
like getting spaces in a store like Target.
Yeah.
That's a struggle in
that's
itself.
That's a big thing. Yeah. It's tough to get to like some of the big box retailers and stuff like that. So because they have a lot more challenges to overcome, it's kind of in this similar to like the radio conversation where you've got, you know, a big major label signed rock band can put out a song and someone sees like what label it's on. It's like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, this is a big label, they've got a lot of people doing radio promo for them, so it's not as tough as you doing it by yourself, let's say. It's not nearly as easy. So yeah, all that combined, it was definitely, I'm sure, an uphill battle for them, but the fact that so many people were hyped for this album certainly helped for them.
So can you think of other rock bands you think might be able to pull something off like this, come out of nowhere? It doesn't even have to be a surprise album per se, but yeah, just shock the hell out of everybody by selling way more than anyone expects and getting a number one album.
Yeah, well, you and I were discussing two big ones, both harder rock bands in this case. The big one's Tool, because Tool hasn't put in an album since, I think it was 2006.
When
10,000 Days came out, and no music since, nothing. I mean, like, they tour constantly.
And they're not even on streaming.
Yeah, they're not even streaming. So,
and there's just a massive cult fan base. I mean, I saw it firsthand, seeing them headline Governor's Ball in New York, which is just sort of like a normie alts EDM music festival. And that day when they headlined, it was just taken over by Tool fans.
Yeah, massive. Absolutely massive. I mean, and yeah, what helps with them is the fact that, again, they have continued to tour. So they still have a very strong, powerful fan base. But yeah, they haven't put out music since then. And the fact that, like you mentioned, yeah, they're not on streaming services. So there's an appetite for Tool music that is almost a little different than a lot of other bands, because like you can't just like log on to Spotify and listen to a Tool album. You have to really seek it out.
And, YouTube.com.
Yeah, or YouTube.com, right.
As I have done.
Oh, plenty. Absolutely. yeah, whenever I like want to like listen to the pots, because I left my like my CD of 10,000 Days like back in Ohio many years ago, so I don't have it with me. So I'm like, whenever I want to actually listen to that, I have to go to YouTube. But anyway, yeah, that's like a big thing, because it's like, okay, when this album does come out, because they apparently are working on it.
Every so often, every like 3 months, they'll give an interview where they'll be like, yeah, we're like 80% done with these bass lines. And you know, yeah, well, after that, I think we'll, you know, Maynard James Keenan will release one more like variation of his wine, and then then maybe that, then the album will be 90% done, then maybe you'll see it.
But then he'll put out two more Pucifer albums and like it's just, it'll never end. But yeah, once this does come out, chances are, I mean, there's been no indication otherwise, that it will be a physical-only album. So that's going to drive it even more so. If that, and I think even if it does end up on streaming services, which, again, just seems very unlikely given just how Tool has been so far with regards to streaming services, but let's say it is, it's still going to do very, very well. And I don't really remember what the sales were like in 2006, but that's the thing. You can't really...
We have no barometer.
No idea,
They haven't put out music in the streaming / drastically reduced physical sales age.
Exactly.
So we have nothing to really guide ourselves by.
Absolutely not. Yeah, so they're the big one. And I think another one is someone who actually is on streaming services, but hasn't put out an album in about the same amount of time, System of a Down, who tours a lot less... if at all, you know, sometimes. I think there was one year recently where they just played basically, I think, one show all year. You know, they're not really going out on tour and, you know, still selling out these huge arenas or whatever. They come and go, I'd say. But I think the appetite for a new System of a Down record is also pretty sizable. Because they kind of went out on top when they put out those Hypnotize and Mesmerize. Those albums did very well. I mean, shoot, you heard System of a Down on like top 40 radio with that, because of like BYOB and I think Lonely Day also. Maybe not super high, but I do remember like when I was like 16 years old turning on the pop station in Dayton, Ohio, and like they're playing System of a Down. That was weird. That's something that you can't even like fathom today. La, 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 la. Everybody's going to the party, have a real good time. Dancing in the desert, blowing up the sunshine.
Yeah, and very much like Brand New, I would say... I am a little bit more familiar with the Tool situation, but I would say it is more or less inevitable that the album will come out at some point, mm-hmm. but it could be at any point in the next, you know, 5 years. And that's sort of like what the situation was in waiting for this Brand New album. Since 2-3 years ago, we knew a final LP was coming, mm-hmm. but we just had no idea when.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I have a feeling of those two we just mentioned, I think Tool is one that's more likely to kind of have a similar rollout in the sense that you don't get like an advanced single. Like I could see them just being like, well, it's here. We did it. Here you go. You know,
because they don't need a single. And if it came out that way, not on streaming, the only way you can hear it is like a digital download. Man, it's so tempting to theorize what it could do. I think it could top six figures. It could do six figures.
With them... I agree. Yeah, I think they could do six figures, maybe even like, you know, the 200K. Like
God, that would be so crazy.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would make it in like the top five of sales weeks that year, maybe.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And like maybe I'm overplaying this because I think, because I'm in the rock world and I'm just like people talking about Tool all the time. But yeah, that doesn't go on streaming. I mean, like the fact that we don't have a real barometer for success because it's been so long. Who knows? That thing could really, really, really sell well. I mean, it's certainly going to sell well no matter what.
So I know you're working on a piece for the charts vertical of Billboard.com about Brand New. So shout that out and shout out your socials, Twitter handle, so people can find you.
Yeah. So I'm working on a story. It's nothing crazy. It's just, you know, a couple chart facts maybe that you didn't know about Brand New. Because they go back pretty far. You know, 2003 was their first charting album. So we're going to kind of delve into some of that stuff, you know, talk about, okay, well, this is when they first made the charts. This is, their radio success back in like the mid 2000s. Cause they had some, here's what it was. And that sort of thing. So if you're a Brand New fan, by all means, you know, check it out, probably up Tuesday or Wednesday, you know, soon. Surfwax83 on Twitter is where you can find that information, or just at Billboard because I'll tweet it too. But I'll tweet it eventually when I remember to, because I keep forgetting. I'm like Twitter. I'm always a Twitter open, but sometimes I'm just like, oh yeah, that's right. I need to post that story I did. Oops. Yeah, I'm a bad journalist. I would make a terrible freelancer right now. Let's put it that way. That's about it.
Hell yeah! Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Let's stay happy and get through these next few days of heavy Brand New listening.
We can do it. I think we can.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, so we are jumping into the second interview on this podcast. Happy to welcome to the show music writer extraordinaire Marie Sherman. What's up?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Totally, yo. I'm always down to talk brand new, and you're one of my favorite people to talk brand new with, so I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about this album.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been thinking about it a lot, as I assume everybody else has. Everybody's out on Taylor Swift duty or something right now, thinking brand new.
So I think a good place to start off for people like us who are just about to nerd out a lot, just tell me about how you first got into Brand New and introduce how you became a fan of the band.
Yeah. So I think for a lot of people in their mid to late and also early 20s, I guess just their 20s, emo, pop punk, that sort of genre, the hybrid line between the two is kind of the music that we grew up on. That was kind of the popular alternative music, especially stuff coming out of New Jersey and Long Island is where my heart was set. I was actually a big Taking Back Sunday fan, which I guess is the unpopular opinion in the Taking Back Sunday versus Brand New lifelong rivalry. But it was really their third album, The Devil and God, which I guess is kind of a cult favorite now, that really got me into the band. And then, of course, I went back and listened to the more sort of classically emo stuff with their first two albums. And I've just been very interested and curious about them ever since. I think they are one of the more interesting bands of that time period, and the fact that they have such a longevity and then such a loyal fan base and super dedicated fans is intriguing to me. So I like them because I like their music. I grew up with it. And also I think they're doing really fascinating stuff, both musically and as just, I guess, businessmen.
Yeah.
Is a weird way to say it, but yeah.
They have a number one album, and it is the first independently released and distributed album to go to number one in 2017. So they are accomplished businessmen.
Yeah, that's great. And I would think, like, I wouldn't know as much about the charts as you do, but I would imagine that's kind of an accomplishment that's normally for, like, hip-hop artists or something, or pop artists. It seems even weird that would be, like, a rock band sort of motive.
Yeah, and, for the sort of rock band that normally does it, for instance, Metallica did it with their last album, Hardwired to Self-Destruct.
Okay, that makes sense.
And that was... Yeah. You know, a band with obviously a massive amount of success to support a self-released distributed album. But so Brand New, killing it these days. So let's talk about this review that you wrote for NPR Music. This one I thought was really interesting. You touched on a lot of interesting stuff. So just first off, like, what was it like sitting down to review an album like this, an hour-long album with so much to dig into? What's it like writing about Brand New?
I don't think I'm alone in saying kind of exciting and also equally infuriating, because there's such limited information about it, which I assume gives you the opportunity to sort of dive in as a sort of blind listener. I thought it was really, well, since I wrote about it for NPR, that was also kind of new, because you think of NPR, it's not they don't do a lot of like emo sort of music stuff. So it was interesting to have to explain sort of their place in history, which I assume everybody had to do. And that can be challenging too, because you want to use the like emo word, but you also want to talk about how they're doing something that's different from your sort of classic, like even the Taking Back Sundays or whatever of the early 2000s, how they're doing something that's a little bit more, I think the word to use is plasticity. I think they're doing something that's a little bit more malleable. It's a little bit more indie rock. There's a lot of like genre things that are happening. And I guess just kind of trying to figure out when all this happened, where the album came from. I know, in my understanding, it was that they announced this limited edition vinyl edition that sold out, but nobody knew what it was called or how many there were or anything. And then 2 days later, 500 kids are getting a CD. It's strange to try and put the pieces together. I mean, you wrote about it quicker than anybody. So what was it like for you?
It was especially intimidating because I wrote about it. It posted like late the next morning, and knowing how intense Brand New fans are online, like growing up reading absolutepunk.net and like knowing what the fan base is like, I was like, shit, if I get stuff wrong, I'm going to hear about it and it's not going to be pretty.
There are Brand New scholars out there on the internet. That is for sure.
Yeah. So you were telling me just before we started this podcast, and I'd love to hear more about your research for the review and digging into some comment sections. You were finding out about some conspiracy theories about this Brand New record.
Right. And I think that like the idea of conspiracy theories are just trying to like put the pieces together, because Brand New are a mysterious band. I think mystery and like rock and roll have gone together since the dawn of rock and roll music. But the way that they do it is very interesting in particular and works well for their fan base. But I was just trying to figure out kind of in the last couple of years since Brand New have started playing shows again, kind of on and off, announcing their breakup and then kind of going back and saying that this new album was going to come in 2016 and it didn't. Trying to figure out how did we get to science fiction in August 2017? And eventually that led me reading a bunch of like Reddit posts and like weird conspiracy theories, a lot of comments on alternative press website. And when the album dropped, a lot of people trying to figure out what certain like lyrics mean. I feel like frontman Jesse Lacey is painted as this sort of unknowable genius. Almost like it's weird to think that this record has like some Easter eggs left for fans to find. I do think that's true. For me, when I was listening to the record and kind of thinking about whatever little mysteries might lie within its text is I was focusing mostly on how the album started and ends, simply because if this is supposed to be the last chapter in Brand New story, how are they bridging this narrative? I feel like they're a very good band when it comes to sequencing. I feel like all of their records, especially the last three, Daisy included, there's a clear through line, I guess. And one thing that I found that I was very interested in is at the end of the first track, Lit It Up, there is this sort of reversed vocal take that happens. And I was trying to figure out what it was, but obviously I'm not a sound engineer, I'm not a producer, I have no idea how to isolate vocals and like slow them down or whatever. But thankfully people on the internet are Brand New fans, are producers, can do this. And there are a couple that I found really interesting. One guy said that if it's Lacey, if it's somebody else, the recording is testing once, disc five, you will be cured tonight. The Cure Tonight lyric doesn't really sound like a Brand New thing to me. That seems like My Chemical Romance or something. But if it is disc five, that makes sense because it's the fifth disc in their discography. Another one is Testing Mark, If Sad, You'll Be Glad Tonight, which kind of also doesn't totally seem Brand New to me, but I like the idea of like the tonight being a through line in a lot of what these fans think that he's saying, almost like the end of If This Is a Day, This Is the End of That. I realize this all sounds a little bonkers, but I like the idea of people trying to figure out exactly what Brand New are trying to tell us. And then there's so much on like all the themes about heaven and hell and all the things that kind of go back to the devil and God raging inside me. So that was my long-winded way of exploring that. And this is only like touching the surface.
Yeah.
There's so much out there.
Yeah. And with these themes of closure, like, first off, do you think this will be the final Brand New album?
I think so. I don't really know if they have anything left to say.
Yeah.
And if they did, I feel like maybe they would think it's, I mean, if you take eight years between to like have a family, or between the last record and this one, and like to have a family and just like kind of grow up and play shows when you want to, it just seems like it's time to kind of call it quits. And I have a lot of respect for bands that kind of set their own expiration date. I feel like that means you're never creating something to appease anybody. And maybe that's part of the reason why this album, if it is the end, is so great.
Where do you think the last show will be, and what do you think it will be like?
Oh, that's a good question. Did they announce all their dates yet?
They announced dates through the end of this year, like North American theater club kind of shows. But as far as, right. I mean, the t-shirt and the on-stage sign that they have been showing where it says brand new 2000 through 2018, you know, that would imply right. that stuff's happening next year, presumably final shows if this is it. So there's a whole 12 months left to work with here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess I didn't really consider that. I mean, in my heart, in my allegiance to geography, I would hope that they would do it on Long Island. But part of me thinks it'd be really cool if it was at that, you've probably read this too, but when the album was originally sent to 500 fans as a CD, it was labeled with this longitude latitude. That was the Devil's Tower.
Yeah, that would be
in Wyoming. It would be cool if they went to Wyoming and played at this weird location that they had teased a year prior. That would be really interesting. And I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
Yeah, oh my God. Or if like Jesse Lacey is listening to this, you just gave him a huge idea right there. It's just like a scavenger hunt leading fans to a specific coordinate on the Devil's Tower where Brand New plays their final set. I'm here for it.
I also like the idea that it's in Wyoming. I think like a really beautiful, desolate place. I think that would be really cool. That would be fitting for the album. It's a very expansive sounding album. Might as well do it in Wyoming.
Yo, now if their final show is just at some venue in the state of New York, we're going to be so underwhelmed.
That is true. That is true.
It's like, yeah, we're playing Madison Square Garden, whatever. Bye. Which they've already played. They co-headlined that with Modest Mouse. So even if they closed out by, you know, if they wanted to play the biggest venue in the tri-state area and they played, you know, Madison Square Garden, it would still kind of be something they've already done.
Right, yeah, and it doesn't seem like they're very interested in repeating in any way, which I think is kind of, it kind of speaks to their success a little bit. I think like a lot of bands, especially that kind of grow up in like emo world, they're dependent on a certain nostalgia to remain sort of relevant or to remain like, I guess, lucrative. And Brand New, like, while they do have that like sort of loyal forever allegiance, I do think there are a lot of like younger Brand New fans who will like view this as their record or I don't know. I think it's a lot more than just I like this in high school, so I'll like this forever, because I don't think people would be as dedicated if it was as simple as this sort of nostalgic thing.
Yeah, totally. So the only thing that really does make me hope is at something like an MSG is just so the most kids can be on hand. Or I say kids, you know what I mean. So the most diehard Brand New fans possible can see them say goodbye. That's what I want.
But if it's in the middle of a field, yeah, in Wyoming, it's... anyone can go to that. If you could get to Wyoming, I bet you have to drive to get there. But other than that, you'll figure it out.
So in going through like reviews for this album or just going up and down Twitter or looking on forums like you've done, it's pretty clear that a lot more people now are into Brand New, and they're sort of they're not just ostracized out to, you know, absolutepunk.net, alternative press like they were when we were first getting into them. So what has it been like for you taking this all in and just seeing just across the board all critics being down with the new Brand New?
It's interesting in a lot of ways, because I think, and we've talked about this like for many years in our friendship of sort of this like new generation of sort of like young emo fans growing into these positions, and we're kind of like gatekeepers in our own right and are willing and excited to talk about this music as something that shouldn't be marginalized as juvenile, but something exciting and worthy of criticism and real thought. That said, I do think there's something about Brand New that even in, like, I think especially like even after like The Devil and God had some like breathing room, I think that's when people started to notice this is something bigger than songs about wanting to kill your girlfriend or whatever. But with this album, I think it's been like a slow growth. I don't think it's specifically this album, but and yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm still trying to work through what's different about Brand New, because I agree with you in that I feel like there's more space for this. I mean, heck, I wrote about Brand New for NPR. That wouldn't have happened in any other year on planet Earth. But I don't know. It's interesting. I think maybe it's because people are sort of now recognizing their places just a really incredible rock band, a really incredible, influential rock band.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is just as simple as the kids who were really into them when their early albums came out now have become adults and are of working age and are like professional writers and editors. I think a lot of it is just that simple. Whereas back in 2004, the people who were in those positions were at their youngest people who grew up with 90s rock and just were like, oh, the Warped Tour, oh, angst. You know, people who just like, for the most part, only knew how to respond to it with a bunch of negative cliches.
Right. But I also think like a lot of music that's formative for you in adolescence, sometimes you kind of lose track of because it does feel so adolescent at a certain point. But like Brand New has kind of grown with each album. I think there is a lot of self-doubt and self-deprecation on Science Fiction, but I think it's a sort of like matured late in life family guy, not, you know, like dad is what I mean by family guy, sort of looking at sort of situations and not ignoring their younger selves or sort of like their like emo days, but growing from them and paying allegiance to them. I don't know. I just respect this record in a weird way.
Yeah. And I mean, like, let's be real. There are lyrics on Your Favorite Weapon, their first album, that that we grimace when we hear them now. And I'm sure they don't feel proud of them when they hear them back.
Oh, absolutely. And the fact that they probably have had to play them live as adult men, it's probably not the most enjoyable experience. But they're kind of not stuck to that. They are appreciative of it, I'm sure. I feel like they kind of are setting an example of how to kind of grow up from that sort of heyday and continue on and be the sort of successful thing. Number one record, man. Like, whatever they're doing it right.
Totally. Yo, so I'll shout out the article one more time. Check out Maria's story on NPR. The title of it that you can Google is Brand New Again, Science Fiction is a Self-Revival, or just Google Brand New Review NPR. Maria Sherman, it's there. Maria, shout out your Twitter handles and really anything else you're working on you want to tell the people about.
Oh, man. Well, there's a lot of exciting stuff, but I can never talk about it just yet. But you can follow me at Maria Sherm on Twitter.com.
Yo, for the people out there, you know when Five Sauce LP3 drops, Maria's the one to go to with the takes.
Oh, God, when is that going to happen? Like, October is their month. It's been a freaking year.
You're telling me. You would know better than me. we'll reconvene when that time comes. But, yeah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, yeah, that is the show. Yeah, I've loved Brand New since I was in high school. They were honestly one of the bands who just show me what real fandom is, show me what obsessive fandom is, and show me what it's like to just take these artists and make them so much of your identity and what inspires you. And that's a lot of what got me into writing about music. So it's pretty insane working for Billboard now on staff and being wrapped up in a week like this of watching the Brand New album drop out of nowhere, get really into it, and then see it become the Billboard number one album. So this was an absolute treat doing this podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. For future podcasts, you know, we are a weekly Billboard.com rock and alternative music podcast. Every Thursday, more or less, we post on Billboard.com to make sure you get it every week. You can subscribe to the show. Head on over to iTunes or just go into the podcast app on your phone. Search for hashtag alternative facts, all one word, that's the name of the show. While you're there, drop in a review. That helps a lot with getting more attention on iTunes and stuff like that. And just helps me hearing feedback, what you guys like, don't like, what you want to hear more of on the show. Just let me know in the star rating and writing your little review right there. Super helpful. And keep up with the show. You can follow me on Twitter. At CPayne on a Plane is the handle, or just search for Chris Payne, CHRISPAYNE. I'm the first name that comes up. So follow me there. I'm always riffing on just stuff I'm into, things that are coming up with the show. Say what's up. I pretty much always write back. And that's pretty much all I have for you guys right now. So we have an exciting podcast coming up next week with an artist who I've been into for a long time, who I've had on one of my podcasts before, whose album recently came out, and don't want to mention them by name just in case something happens, because the interview has not happened yet, and never want to put these things in stone because, you know, shit happens. But I'm pretty excited about who I'm talking to in a couple of days, and I'm pretty sure that will be next Thursday's interview on Alternative Facts. So yeah, thanks so much for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.